Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with your host, Reverend Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Fort Worth in Texas. Today I welcome back to the show Richard Anderson. In addition to his full-time job with the National Health Service in Great Britain, and being a husband and dad to three wonderful daughters, he's also actively involved on the spiritual path as a certified awakening coach, author, and creator of online meditations. I'm sure he's up to other stuff too that we know not of, but he's a very busy man. We become acquainted after Richard began listening to my show several years ago now, I think. And we've met up in the flesh on several occasions, which has been wonderful. So it's a joy to welcome a friend and author, Richard C. Anderson, to today's show. Hi, Richard.
Hello, Paul. It's wonderful to be with you again. And it's lovely to see you on my screen here.
Yeah, we're actually looking at each other right now.
Quite a long way apart at the moment.
All right. So we're focusing today on Richard's new book, and it's entitled Mind Spirit Detox, Reboot, Reset, and Recharge, with 40 beautiful procedures to deepen your oneness with spirit. And, you know, sometimes we have to do those things, don't we? We have to reboot and reset and recharge, basically remember to reconnect to the one, yes?
Yeah, I guess we have to remember that almost moment by moment and certainly day by day. Otherwise, life just takes us over and we just get on this conveyor belt of doing, 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 worrying, 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 and all the other awful habits that we have. So, I wrote the book as a means of, people talk about detoxing the body, going on a detox diet. And it just occurred to me that a lot of the practices that I'd been building up in my own sort of library of things that I do on a regular basis, the habits I built into my life, those habits seem to be really good at detoxing the mind-spirit system.
Yeah,
it's like an internal refresh, an internal cleanse. And it's just something we have to do on a regular basis. Otherwise, you know, if you don't do it, you just sort of get into this cyclical habit of event, reaction. And, you know, if we do that with our bodies, if we neglect our bodies, but we become more abundant and we become sick ultimately. So why not think about doing it with our, you know, spiritual system?
Very good point. And, you know, like you said, it's detox is short for toxicity, isn't it? Which is an imbalance or a diseased state, based usually on our clinging to certain things, right? And the spiritual path is not about clinging, it's about surrendering. We talk a lot about that on this show, releasing our grasp. But it's hard to do that, you know, because we're taught from an early age to acquire things, to acquire, more and more stuff, acquire a nice house, a family, acquire success or whatever. Even on the spiritual path, we can kind of turn that into a spiritual materialism. You know, I'm acquiring more wisdom. Look at me, I'm special, etc. So the detox is to even release that, which can be sometimes the most difficult thing of all, right? To release our specialness, right? Look at me, I'm special. in the world's terms, but I've let that one go. But now I'm special in spiritual terms. So, you know, that's a difficult one too. So it's all about releasing, isn't it? We're giving up. What are we giving up, though? We're giving up a sense of self, which could never be very big, right? However large we think we are, we're still very small in relation to the universe. And we're swapping that for being in the flow of this oneness that is infinite, right? So really, it's a good bargain, isn't it, to do that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you talk about having this sense of self, it's almost like we put ourselves at the center of the entire universe, right, according to us, from where we look.
Right.
There's a great management theory called Johari Windows. I don't know if you heard of it. It's called Windows in the World. It was designed by two psychologists. One was called Joe and one was called Harry. So they call it Johari Windows. Like an Eastern vibe to it. The idea is that two different people can look at the planet and they see different things because this line of sight is coming from different places. And, you know, in the same way, our own line of sight tends to be so tied up in this thing we call the I, me. But when you actually dig into that, what is this thing called the me? A lot of people don't know. And if you don't know who you are and you don't know who or what God or spirit is, no wonder there's a breakdown of relationship, of communication, of connection. So I come from the Christian evangelical background, and it just staggered me. It's another reason that I felt compelled to write the book. It staggered me how many Christians seem to feel distant from God. And then I asked myself, why do they feel distant from God? And the more I explored around this matter of who the self is, the more I realized that no Christians who I knew had really studied this outside a very narrow field. Now, when people talk about me or the I, there isn't really one me or I on a superficial level. In fact, we're a bit like a load of different people on the top deck of a bus having a discussion together. So, you know, the chattering. There might be one me who wants to lose a few kilos or pounds in the States. There is another me who gets home from work and has the munchies and looks in the fridge for something nice to eat. It's the same me, but we're sort of conflicted. But then when you go beyond that, and you really search down to who is the deepest version of this me, I can objectify myself and see me. I can see my hands, my arms, my body. And the subjective part of me can see that. And then you can go further and back and make that subjective bit an object. So the further you go back in this exercise, that eventually you come to a part of you that you can't see. And that ultimately is the all subjective part of you, which is not really a thing. You can't see it. It's the real Paul. It's the real Richard, the part of you who is pure awareness, pure witness, and that's right. You. And when you understand that about who or what you are, then you can begin to have more of a relationship with the world around you, not one based on false identification.
Right, and you have that exercise in the book, don't you? A sort of disidentification exercise. You know, I have a body, but I'm not my body. I have a mind, etc. Yeah. I have thoughts, and you take it back and back to this idea of this witnessing presence. You know, which is always available, but like you said, is beyond any definition. Right, it just is. And yet we notice if we are paying attention that it's actually always there, right? And it's part of the headless way. You know, Douglas Harding was a great British spiritual iconoclast back in the 20th century, and he came up with this idea of the headless way, that you can never see your own head. And because, you know, you can see it in a mirror, but that's not really seeing it. It's because the witness is coming from your inside your head, you know, inside your being, and looking out. So the reality is you're observing the universe from this witness, which is incredibly spacious, right? It's incredibly spacious. it allows for everything. It is the nature of God in a sense. So you are in alignment with the divine when you're doing that. So it's something you've always had, right? Whether you remember it or not, right? It's who you are. So I guess you could call it the enlightenment experience. You know, when people wake up to that awareness, they think, oh my goodness, this is quite remarkable. It's been here all along, and I didn't know it. Like fish looking for water. You know, we've always had it, kind of thing.
Yeah, I love there's a little sort of joke maybe goes around in spiritual circles around one fish talking to another fish, and the first fish says to the second, "Hey, what do you think of this water? It's great." And the second fish says, "What water?
What water?" Yeah, right.
And this is this thing of just not noticing. And I guess, I mean, I've written the book of 40, you know, fairly short practices. They're fairly simple. And some of them are even quite good fun. If they make you chuckle, they're a good
book. Let's hope so. We want it to be a fun book.
Well, there's one you can do. The first time I did this one, I was actually driving, which I wouldn't necessarily recommend. But it's talking about the headless. The practice is kind of like a halfway house to becoming more unitive in your consciousness. So what you can do is, and I say this to anybody listening to this, you can imagine that you have no head and that your consciousness resides not within your head looking out through your eyes, but it's sort of floating somewhere in space above your shoulders. Mm-hmm. When you really get into this, you begin to really, you see the world in a different way, and you begin to connect with things, and there's less of a distance and there's less of a divide. And instead of it being me and the outside world, everything begins to become one thing. So it's just, that's one little example of an exercise you can do that breaks the habit of this false identification. Because I've got to admit, I go through most days in a bit of a haze, you know, falsely identifying with me as a father, me as a manager in the health service, me in relationship to other people, what's going on, judgmental thoughts. And then the trick is to be able to remain pretty conscious of the real reality behind that. And so a lot of these practices enable us just to break that spell that holds us, and then we see the reality of who or what we are and what we're doing, more importantly, in our walk on a day-to-day basis.
Right, and I think the important thing there is not to say, I shouldn't be doing this, you know, I should be in the unitive state always. It's noticing, you know, well, right now I'm identifying as a dad, or right now I'm getting confused about this particular issue. You know, so it's still, we're still disidentifying from it. We're looking at it. We're noticing ourselves doing these things. And I think that's the key, right? It's not, oh, I wish I could just get beyond all having these thoughts. No, you can have any thought you want, but once you understand what you're doing, then you're free from that thought. And you move very quickly through it once you begin to say, ah, that's me doing this now, as opposed to I'm locked in this, I'm lost in this, right? And I think that's helpful for people because, you know, the idea that, oh my goodness, I got to be enlightened all the time. You know, the hell with that, it's too difficult. You know, we give up on it. And instead of that, you know, just be comfortable with who you are. I think I can't remember the name of the Chinese sage, but he says, everyday life is very good Tao. And, you know, and I think what he meant by that was, you know, just what's happening is it, you know, rather than saying, oh, well, it's not happening quite the way I would like it. Well, no, it's happening the way it is. And even when we've lost it, we're watching myself losing it. That's the way it is right now. That's enlightenment. So you can be enlightened even in a midst of a screaming row, you know, once you see yourself doing it. So it's kind of interesting. Everything's grist for the mill, in other words, because I think a lot of people have that idea that I've got to be different, you know, I've got to change. And you mentioned your childhood church, you know, which is very much, you know, I'm a miserable sinner and I've got to purify myself so I can become, you know, worthy to whatever it is that I'm worthy to do. But it never really goes into that, right? It's all about you know, you become saved and then everything's supposed to be good. Well, being saved is just the beginning, isn't it, of then your new life. And there's very little practice in that in traditional Christian circles. You know, you're saved and that's it. Well, no, that's just the beginning of the way the practice starts.
Yeah, and I love what you said. I noticed that you use the word notice, and that's really a lot of what it's about. People get themselves tied up in knots around striving to be these other people that they see, or, you know, the people that are on your show. I often listen to people on your show and think, whoa, if I could only be like that. And then I ask myself and say, well, I'm not like that. I'm like me. And there's a reason. We've all got a series of gifts that are our highest qualities. And there's actually a practice in the book around and how you can sift those things and come to realize what it is that you're put on this planet for. Because I mentioned, you know, started off by saying you understand who you are, you understand who God is. In the middle of all that is, what the hell are you doing here? And we're all doing different things. And the people who are most fulfilled, I've noticed, who are walking the planet, are those people who have some sort of a mission that aligns with the things that they're brilliant at. Mm-hmm. If you put together all of the different things that make you brilliant, that make me brilliant, that make the people listening to the show brilliant, you put those together, we all have a different pattern. None of us are the same. And that pattern of what you're brilliant at is what I think you can call your genius. And that's the point also of the book, to understand what are you put on this planet for.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, I was just reading about a quote from Adyashanti the other day saying exactly the same thing. You know, you have to find out what your driving desire is. Why are you here? What's the purpose that you have? It doesn't matter what it is. You have to find out what it is, because once you know that, then, you know, that's halfway to enlightenment, is knowing or opening, is deciding, oh, yeah, this is what I'm here to do. The Gita talks about it, right? It says better to do your own dharma than somebody else's, however low yours is, however humble it is, you know, rather than, oh, I wish I could be, like you said earlier, I wish I could be like that person. Well, no, you have to be you authentically, right? Whatever. Because here's the reason, is that that's the way God is, right? That's the way universe is. Everything is valuable. Everything is uniquely placed to be taking God or the divine or whatever you want to call it on a journey. And so nobody could take God on a journey quite like you, you know. So you're just as valuable as someone we might laud and lift up as, you know, the greatest thing. And what we tend to do is have a couple of people in each generation that we sort of lift up, right? So, and we crank out these names over and over again. So we embody in them all our hopes and aspirations. So it's usually the same people. It's the Dalai Lama, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., a few others, you know. And if we're on the spiritual path, we've got our own favorites. They're the ones, you know. The downside to that is, you know, none of those folks, you know, especially Mahatma Gandhi or whatever, or Martin Luther King, they were very flawed people in many regards, but they've been deified, you know, they've been beatified so that we can't really criticize them anymore. That's okay, but the danger is that we put all the spiritual stuff on them, and then that makes us look less than, you know, instead of claiming our own inherent worth.
Well, we look less than because we are giving away our greatness and we're pinning it on those people. Right. So the people that often that you really like, if you're a fan of somebody, a sportsman or a musician or something, or a poet, they're typically people that actually have the qualities that you have, but you give away your greatest good to them. And there's a practice in the book called The Golden Shadow, which is a way to pull that back to yourself and re-own that greatness, those qualities.
Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, I mean, people might be aware of the thing called the shadow. But less aware of the other side of that, which is the golden shadow. So the shadow is a thing that you have, qualities that you have that your ego doesn't want to really admit to. So typically, people who wind you up, there's something about them that is actually part of your shadow. Now, the first time I came across this, I didn't really. It took me a while to sort of to click with the notion, and I was thinking to myself, well, what is it? Who are the people that wind me up? And then I realised it's arrogance. I really can't stand arrogant people. Yeah. And then I remembered, okay, so this means that I'm perhaps a little bit arrogant. There's something in there I didn't want to admit.
Yeah, of course, we never do.
When I put the two together, honestly, I laughed out loud. I was on my own, but I really had a good old belly laugh because I realized, actually, this is so true. And the golden shadow is then the other side of that. Your ego pushes the things away because your ego doesn't like pain. It doesn't like mental pain. It doesn't like physical pain. So it tries to push things away, tries to push pain away, keep it at a distance. So that's why we pin those things on other people. So I then recognize this thing in other people and I say, you're arrogant, I don't like that, rather than noticing that actually there's something about me that might be very, very slightly arrogant from time to time.
Yeah, just not very, very, very much. Slightly, yeah.
This is my ego disavowing it. the other side of it, think of somebody who you really like, who you're a real fan of. As you know, I really like David Bowie. As a musician. Okay, so there's things, therefore, about David Bowie that are things in myself. So I like, when I have a team, I really like to get great people around me and just let them fly. And he used to with musicians. The musicians that played with him said that he got more out of them than anyone else they ever worked with. Because
right.
He just absolutely believed in them. And I do the same with people that I have. However, There are these characteristics of David Bowie that I'm obviously taking away from myself and almost pinning on him. And so there's an exercise you can do to bring that back to yourself. And otherwise you're just sort of almost denuding yourself of your own abilities. And part of the book is around recognizing those things of you that really are your mission to give away and to let flow and let fly whilst you're walking on this earth.
Yes.
That's a great system to reintegrate those parts of you that maybe you've lost.
Right, exactly. Well, and, you know, in order for you to let go of your ego, right, you have to have a healthy ego. I know it sounds contradictory, but, you know, this isn't about, you know, being worthless. You know, well, I'm nothing and I got to let go of being nothing. This is about a healthy self-esteem because, you know, in order for us to release, you know, that we have to be healthy minded, right? And that means we have to have a sense of self that is in right proportion. You know, it's the same, like you said earlier, with the body, the healthy body. You know, you don't want to be worshiping your body, but you don't want to be neglecting it either. You know, you want it to be a good vehicle for you to move through your life. So it's got to be fairly healthy in order to do that. So again, but balance, isn't it? It's but we give away our power so easily, I think, especially when we're not paying attention or we're tired or whatever. It's easy to make it about somebody else. And it's very rarely about anybody else. You know, we live in a world of complete projection. Like you said, I'm projecting onto others the very things that were within me. But there's a gift there, isn't there? Because that's the mirror. I get to see the mirror of myself faithfully outprinted in other folks in situations around me. And notice how finely tuned the universe is, because if you say to the universe in the morning, I think I've really had an amazing meditation. I don't think I'm going to get angry ever again. I've transcended that one. But by the end of the day, you will be in a screaming row with somebody. It's guaranteed to happen because the universe likes to test you. You know, that's the good news about that is the universe loves you so much it's going to send the test real quickly. You know, so you got to be careful what we say about ourselves. You know,
God's got a sense of humor, and part of it is the humorous way in which we get a bit slapped down when we let our ego run away a little bit.
We're getting close to the first break, so if you got a quick thought, that's great.
Well, I just maybe something I can go through after the break around non-duality, where looking at the world and your place within it. So that'll be a little trailer for what we're going to talk about after the break, maybe.
Yep. And let's talk about the book a little bit. It's available in all the usual outlets, right? It's published by O Books, is it? I think O Books, both Britain and the US. And if people want to get in touch with you, Richard, what's the best way?
If you have a look at www.awakeningcoaching.co.uk, that's .co.uk. There's my website, and you can give me a buzz or get in contact via the website. I've also got a YouTube channel with lots of book reviews, mostly around the spiritual path. So people find that quite fun. It seems to be going down very well.
Good.
Yeah.
So just go to Richard Anderson and go to the same website and you'll find the YouTube
channel. Yeah, there's a link from the website, awakeningcoaching.co.uk. There's my Facebook link and my YouTube link there as well. And also there are quite a few meditations, particularly meditations that are in the book. I figured you can't really read a book and meditate at the same time, so I put them online. You can listen to them and shut your eyes.
Yeah, excellent. All right, nice very good. Do. That's a very nice thing to do. Don't do it in a car.
No.
Yeah, that might be dangerous. All right, let's take a break. We're going to listen to these messages from Unity. And when we come back, we'll look a little bit more detail on some of the practices and the way the book's set up. And also talk a little bit more about what awakening coaching actually is. So join us then after these messages from Unity.
All are welcome. We're glad you found us. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Unity Online Radio is bringing the message of unity to thousands of spiritual seekers around the world. If you enjoy our programming, we invite you to support it by visiting unityonlineradio.org and clicking on Donate Now. Help us continue to provide inspiring content to everyone. Thank you for your support.
Here's a Unity Teachable Moment with Reverend Ogun Holder, taken from a talk at Unity on the River in Amesbury, Massachusetts.
Vulnerability is very uncomfortable. But as we know from so many teachings by so many people and from our own experience, the only way we will ever experience true connection is to be vulnerable, to be open, and to say, but we say to ourselves, but when we're vulnerable, we risk being hurt. Well, you only risk being hurt, again, if you don't get a full understanding of how love works. Nothing and no one can hurt you. Nothing and no one is against you. And everything that happens in your life, as I always say, and I will always say, so if I keep saying it and you keep hearing it and you get tired of me hearing it, I apologize. But everything happens in our life as an opportunity for us to show up as God.
To find a Unity church near you, visit unity.org.
Take Unity Magazine with you wherever you go with the new Unity Magazine Digital Edition, available now for Android, iOS, and Kindle. It has a gorgeous new look and functionality that makes it easy to share inspirational articles. Sign up for email notifications for the latest issues, articles by your favorite authors, and topics you care about. Unity Magazine's Digital Edition is free with your print subscription, so download the app today or go to unitymagazine.org/subscribe to find out more.
Ready to roll the dice? Check out the new Intention Dice from Unity. 5 dice, different colors, each with words that can prompt you to set an intention for the day, create an affirmation, or journal your thoughts. Roll the green die for abundance and see what comes up. Enriched, worthy, generous. Blue for health. Energetic, whole, radiant. 5 dice, limitless possibilities for your life. Find them at unity.org/dice.
Enroll in the Mystery School with Maggie Whitehouse every Monday at 2 p.m. Central. Based in the UK, Maggie is a maverick priest, comedian, and writer that'll introduce you to all things mystical. Join in the conversation with some fascinating guests and explore topics like Kabbalah, the Divine Feminine, shamanism, and a lot more. Explore some new ideas and provocative topics, all delivered with a sense of humor. Check out our online schedule or get the podcast on demand here on unityonlineradio.org.
Call now with your question or comment. 816-251-3555. That's 816-251-3555.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, so welcome back to today's show. I'm with Richard Anderson. We're talking about his new book. It's called Mind Spirit Detox, Reboot, Reset, and Recharge, with 40 beautiful practices to deepen your oneness with spirit. And let me tell you about each practice here, because each one begins with a quotation, usually from the Bible and then some other spiritual tradition or teacher, a practice and a meditation or visualization, sometimes a discussion, and then some practical steps for contemplation. So you have a complete system here. And as Richard said, you can also listen to this on YouTube, so you can do your own guided meditation that Richard leads you through. But I like both, because it's good to read about it and to get his insights, and can, you know, get familiar with it before you relax into the actual meditation practice. So it's a sort of a multi-angled approach to 40 key spiritual topics, from some we'd already talked about, this idea of disidentification or letting go, to, you know, the looking at your shadow and your golden shadow, to gratitude and how to seek guidance. So it's all in there. If you can find a bunch of stuff, and you don't have to read it sequentially. It's one of those books where you can just jump in and read a chapter, something that appeals to you one particular day. I'm looking at Live Your Mission here. Was one on wisdom, pure seeing, pure being. There's one about play, life music. There's a whole bunch of different ones. Know Your Genius, Transformation, Life Review. One of the ones I like, Align with the Divine and Shine. A little bit of rhyme in there. So it's wonderful to just dip in. And that's the way I enjoy reading this book. And it's one of those things you can read the practices again and again, because as with any true spiritual path, it's not just reading it intellectually one time. It's allowing it to speak to you at a depth. And I think this book allows for that to happen. So why don't we jump into a couple of them? We've already mentioned a few. Is there a particular favorite of yours you think, man, I did exceptionally well on that one?
I was going to mention a couple that you do outside. We were talking about the self and the ego. And in terms of getting a healthy understanding of self, why not just really widen your horizons as far as you possibly can to see where you fit in with everything? Now, we also mentioned around a traditional church. And when I go to the traditional Church of England up the road, the first thing you do is get reminded how awful you are, your sinners, et cetera, et cetera. So it always starts on a bit of a downer. And it also starts on a degree of separation. So we are separated from God, is the teaching. We're separated from pretty much everything. And I was sitting on a bench overlooking the sea in a beautiful town, the next one up the coast, called Lyme Regis, before I wrote the book. It was about 4 or 5 years ago. And I was just gazing at the horizon. And I then opened my mind to see what was beyond the horizon. And eventually, in my mind's eye, I took in absolutely everything, the entire earth and its and the universe beyond. And I had this incredible, visceral experience that I was home, that I was one with all of this, that I belonged here. And I recognized that the truth that every single molecule in my body and your body and everybody's body who's listening to this came from supernova, from exploding stars. So we are made of stardust. So everything in the universe and us are effectively one. There's no separation. So everything that you see, if you pick a leaf up by the bench you're sitting on, that was imbued with the breath of God. And there's nothing here that isn't part of the entire universe. And that includes you yourself. So that for me, that was, I think these practices are intended to be very, very practical. It's a way in which you can experience things, not just read, dogma on a page, actually experience. And in this instance, it's a way of experiencing non-duality. So that practice is called You Are the Universe and You Are Home. And probably my favorite practice, the one that has the most profound effect on me, is called Heaven Is Here. And this one first I did, it must have been 15 years ago, on an island called Tresco, which is in the Scilly Isles, that's spelled S-C-I-L-L-Y. It was about 30 miles off the Land's End Peninsula off Cornwall in the Atlantic. And it was a beautiful golden evening. And I was walking on my own in the northern part of the island, which is full of heathland and moors and little bays. And there were some seals that had popped their heads out of the water. And the as the sun sank down, everything was lit up this sort of beautiful sort of golden, reddy brown color. And it was a warm evening, which is quite unusual in England, particularly out there in the Scillies, in the middle of the sea as they are. And as I was walking, I had this incredible feeling that I had literally died and gone to heaven. And these were my first few steps on the other side. And in order not to shock us, it's made to look very familiar. So I was walking along it's almost like it wasn't, I was imagining it. I honestly felt that I was in heaven. And I've done this a few times. And when I do it, again, I get a completely different perspective on the world. It's almost like the scales fall away from my eyes and I see the beauty of everything around me. I've done it in places like Pilsen Penn, which I think you're familiar with in Dorset, on top of a volcano in Lanzarote. Whenever I do it, it has such an incredibly profound effect on me that I can remember every place in which I did it. And I see this earth as if through the eyes of a newcomer. Hmm. Because I'm seeing heaven as if I'm a newcomer there. And I recognize actually heaven is here, just we don't see it. And when I then greet people, because often I do it in a place of solitude, but when I greet people, I greet them as the people who they truly are, as eternal spirits who are having a brief sojourn here on planet Earth in human form. And all of the things that I don't normally ever see come alive, the reality and the beauty and the absolute awesome nature of being on this planet through that practice.
Very fascinating, it's a dissolution of process, isn't it? It's letting go of what you thought you were in a way and going into that newness of life. And it's like you said, it may not last forever, it wears off after a while, but there's that sense of everything's fresh and new, and the mystics talk about that a lot. One of my favorites is Thomas Traherne, where he sees the fields were orient, golden and orient wheat, and the children were angels playing in the streets, and everything was full of light and glowing, because we begin to see the universe as it is rather than as we've been conditioned to see it. It's a sloughing off of that conditioning, and it seems like a death. I mean, it's interesting you bring it up, because I was just thinking about an experience I had in the beach in British Columbia. We were lying there, my wife and I, for a long time listening to the waves. And you know, it's relentless. You never stop the sound of the waves. But it's not an annoying sound. It's the rhythm of the universe. And I happen to be very close to the god Shiva, you know, the image of God as transformer or destroyer, you could say sometimes.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden Shiva was the waves, you know, and it was chanting at me, and everything was, and then Shiva said to me, you know, I am in you as well. I'm in the mountains, except it wasn't the voice, but that whole idea that everything was Shiva. You know, it wasn't an intellectual thing, because I think it might be if you didn't have a relationship with Shiva, but I you know, I've done some personal work with Shiva. So it's become a visceral thing for me. But it was fascinating that, and it was it was similar in the sense, it was a glorious sense of everything's possible, everything's right, all is well, you can relax, we got it taken care of, you know, that sort of feeling. And it was really quite fascinating. And then about, I don't know, 10 minutes after that, we were walking, we were still lying on the beach, and this person comes up to us. And he was wearing what looked like Texas clothes. He were in cowboy hats, a belt, and jeans, and a white shirt. But he wasn't from Texas. He was from Calgary, another cowboy area. And he began to talk with me, and I stood up, and we chatted for a while. He wanted to know whether he should move to British Columbia, because his girlfriend was there, but all his life was in Calgary, and they wanted me to tell him, and thought this was strange. Anyway, I was in the middle of a transition myself, so I was thinking, you know, who is this guy? Why is he asking me these questions? Because I'm going through the same process myself. There's the projection again.
Yeah.
Anyway, I gave him a little bit of advice. He walked off, and then he seemed to disappear, completely disappear. So after a while, I thought, wait a minute, was that a real person? Or was that some entity that showed up, you know, looking like a Texan, wanted to know something, and really asking me to look at myself? And
yeah.
He came after the Shiva thing. So, you know, I don't know, but it was one of the more unusual, and both my wife and I looked at each other and thought, what was that about? How did that happen?
So you weren't the only one that saw him then?
No, that's right. She saw him too. Saw him disappear. Well, he just disappeared off the beach. I don't know where he went.
Wow.
Anyway.
Well, I mean, the amazing thing when I'm coaching, and this isn't an unusual thing amongst awakening coaches, is that when you're coaching someone, the issues they have are a bit of a mirror of the things that you're going through yourself, exactly like you and the Texan. This is quite incredible how that happens. And I think one of the, you know, you mentioned about
synchronicities.
Yeah. The synchronicities, again, once you open and to the flow of the universe, and what good the universe has for you, and when you step to one side and just allow that to happen, when you surrender, and there are surrendering practices in here, it's just incredible what happens. In one of the reasons why I think some people have told me that they chime with the book is that I've written it from a position of somebody living a very real life. You know, I'm managing a service of social services, so I have a team of 20 social workers underneath me. I have a budget for about 1,000 people in homes and having domiciliary care. I manage a swathe of the NHS, the National Health Service. So it's a kind of a, you know, it's a busy day job,
right?
And sometimes a busy evening job. And the practices are for people who are grappling with the busy lives, with the family. Maybe they're commuting. They might have debt problems. You know, real life problems. But it's a way in which you are able to both connect with reality, but also connect with the sublime. And you know, you mentioned mysticism earlier, and my father is a great follower of mysticism, and he had a book I caught my eye the other day, and it was something that he picked up. Is literally it's got pound, shilling, and pence price on the front of it. It's from 1961, and I think this is something that very much resonates with me, because The book talks about, you know, from the position of the early 60s when people weren't very familiar in the West with Hinduism or Buddhism. And the writer, who's R.C. Zainer, says, religion for the Hindu or Buddhists, we're repeatedly told by the modern advocates of these two religions, is primarily a matter of experience. It's not so much something to be believed, there's something to be lived. And that really resonates with me. And the reason I think why practice is so important, as much as anything, if we don't practice, we just fall back onto automatic conditioning, really, the things and the habits we normally do. But the reason I think that the practices are important is that it brings us a real experience. It's not just reading words in a book and saying, okay, I'm going to go along with those and repeat the words. It's way more than words. It's actually plunging headfirst into the experience of the divine and linking that with this messy thing that we call our lives. And it's not that often that we necessarily put those two together. Often people will separate them out. But this is a thing, it's one thing, it's a unitive thing.
Right. Yeah, you make excellent points there. And, you know, that's why I was attracted to unity, I think, because, you know, when I grew up in the Church of England and it never seemed to be particularly relevant to my everyday life, you know. And when I found unity, I found this way of thinking and being that was actually a way of life, that you could practice the principles on a daily basis. And, of course, part of practice is direct experience, right? You know, you're practicing it from the heart, not from your head. So that's not real practice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very, very important. Zainer, by the way, translated a wonderful version of the Gita that's well received. So he did a lot of work on mysticism and Hinduism. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm bringing this stuff into my everyday job. I mean, I've been absolutely bowled over by a thing that I call downloads, and I think I've looked it up, and I think other people call them downloads as well. Where if you're struggling with a really tricky problem, and it can be a work or outside work. Rather than using your left brain to sort of work logically through a problem and trying to find a solution for yourself, you go into more of a contemplative position. So not necessarily meditating, not concentration, but contemplation, which is somewhere between the two. It doesn't push too hard, but also it can take time. It often takes a couple of weeks to get an answer. But I basically, if I have a tricky question, I offer it up to the universe. I just go, here's the question, tricky one I know, please grant me an answer. And every time I've done this, I've had the most phenomenal answers back, and they come in as downloads. I mean, even in the process of writing this book, I went into a flow state. It did help that my wife was in South America for 3 weeks. So every night I'd sit down and write a practice. It just flowed through me. The tricky bit was in terms of getting it published and knowing what to do. And it wasn't quite ready, and I didn't know what to do. So I just offered it up. Don't know what to do. Help. Flow. I'll get out of the way. And driving home one day, and every single answer came to me as a download. So I came home and I said to my wife, Isabel, you need to give me 4 hours to sit in the office to sort this out, because I've had a big download and I need to follow it. And there were things around changing some of the chapters around this, that, and the other in terms of the writing, but also which publisher to go to. It was indeed about 4 hours of sitting down, doing some pitches to this particular publisher. And within 2 days, I had an incredibly favorable response for them. They put it out to their reading panel. Within the week, I had a book deal. And I didn't come up with any of that. It came as a download. Mm-hmm. I mean, similarly, I had a very tricky strategic problem. I didn't know how to structure various things at work, and it came to me as a download. When I wasn't expecting it. I'm listening to this thing going, oh, that's good. I like that. It didn't come to me. So, you know, that's the practical nature of this book. You can connect the real world with the subtle practices and just opening to spirit. And I've not come across too many books that make that jump across that divide or connect those two modes of being, as it were. They're often sort of nitty gritty, books around real life narrative, or they're a little bit off with the fairies. Mysticism, for example, off with the fairies. I love it, but it's not really necessarily plunging it back into what do you do with this thing back in this messy thing we call life.
Right, exactly. One important thing is not to take ourselves too seriously. I know we always do. And I love the chapter on play, right? And it says when you got kids, you sort of give them permission to play because they're playing. But even if then you don't have kids, it's okay to play, right? And it's interesting. There's a quote from Zechariah at the beginning of that chapter, and it says, "And the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the streets and in its streets." And I thought that's so similar to the Thomas Traherne, when he talked about the golden children playing. And when we play, we reconnect, don't we? I was at lunch with my one of my grandchildren, and she's 5 now, and she'd just done a drama production, and we were at lunch together. And at one point, she just turned to me and just beamed. And there were no words. It was just the joy of her. She just looked into my eyes and beamed. And I foolishly respond. I shouldn't say foolishly, but I unnecessarily responded. I said, "You did a great job today." And I thought, but that was an added extra, because I'd already told her that. What she was doing was connecting to me at the deep level, in a very playful, joyous way. And I thought, man, that's a moment that, that's forever, And we learn so much as a 5-year-old. So I'm learning so much, from that 5-year-old about being present, being joyful, and just beaming, And it was delightful. And I'll keep that moment in my head forever. I know you have those experiences with your own kids. We all do. But they teach us so much, they're not encumbered yet with all the conditions and details of life, right? They're still in touch.
Yeah, I mean, we're both blessed with having 5-year-olds in our life. And boy, 5-year-olds are amazing.
Yeah, that's right.
My little Emily, I looked her in the eyes yesterday and I said, "Do you know what? When you came into my life, you made me realize what it's all about all over again."
There we go.
I must post a video actually on my channel of it's just a few seconds. We were watching Glastonbury last night, and they had Stormzy, who's the grime artist, on there.
Oh yeah,
he's an amazing Christian. Actually, he did a really amazing set, and my daughter's never seen him before, but she decided to get up and start dancing, and it's just this absolute passion and no self consciousness and just incredible joie de vivre. And we need to reconnect with this as however old we are as adults, because it's so important, and we can learn so much from those who haven't spent too much time on this earth just yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I intend to stay there in that mode for, because you're only as old as you think you are, and I want to stay teachable and joyous for the rest of my life. And I think when I see people who are weighed down and just not having a good time, it's because they've lost touch with that spark. So part of the work is to help people reconnect with their own inner spark and value. We got a few minutes left. Tell us about Awakening Coaching. I think you came to that through Arjun and Ardak, right? A British guy living in California.
Yeah, he's an amazing guy. Great writer, great teacher. There's a vibe of Awakening Coaching throughout this book, to be honest. And what Awakening Coaching is whatever problem that people come to you with, the way that I like to coach is to go as deep as you can possibly get. And Awakening is part of that. That exercise about recognizing who you actually are, that's an awakening exercise. We call it radical awakening in Awakening Coaching. We start off with the question, what is your deepest longing? And then what is your longest reach? Amazing questions. I'd ask anybody listening to the program to contemplate those two. And finally, we work our way through to what is it that you want from me? And obviously I have a load of different techniques and exercises I can do with people, but most of all, I have absolute certainty that whatever issues those people come to me with, we will achieve what they want to.
Right.
And the key that we have there is the connection. There's a connection of love, you know, from one person to another. And I do my best to get out of the way and allow the universe to flow through me. And that's the way it works. And it's really good fun. It's also very simple. I heard the other day a quote from Leonardo da Vinci, who said, "Simplicity is the ultimate sophistication." And I love that. I really love simplicity. And we get, you know, again, looking at the five-year-old, they're simple. They live absolutely in the moment. They don't particularly remember anything. They don't hold grudges. And the key to, I think, the practice in this book and awakening coaching is simplicity. Really, really making a heartfelt connection with the person who I'm coaching, and then letting the universe do that work through them.
Right. I think David Bowie learned that as he got older, you know, that he was kind of a complicated guy back in the day, you know, with all the various images and costumes and personas. And then he realized I could just be me at the end. And there was something radical about that, you know. Of course, was he ever really him? Because he always had some kind of persona going on. But I like this, his end albums because of that greater simplicity. I think he discovered, you know, who he was. He was comfortable in that. Folks, we're at the end of the show. Let me, I'm going to ask Richard to give us a couple of words of advice. But I'm going to tell you about next week's show to give him time to come up with that. Next week, Isaac Bentwich, MD, joins me from Israel, which is cool. And we're going to discuss his new translation of the Bhagavad Gita entitled Gita, A Timeless Guide for Our Time. It's interesting because it's in metrics and rhyme. So it's got an interesting format. But join me next week for that. Richard, you have words of wisdom.
Again, come back to that word you said about notice. Just when you live your life tomorrow, just notice things. Be conscious of who you are. You're an eternal spirit having a brief sojourn here on planet Earth, and have a brilliant day and play lots. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah, wonderful way to end. I hope you've enjoyed Richard Anderson. I think you can tell he's got a lot of life energy about him. And the book, likewise, will inspire you and reboot and reset you to inspire you with your life energy. So thanks for listening in. We appreciate you listening to this Voice of an Awakening World, and particularly to my show, World Spirituality. Thanks, Richard.
Thanks, Paul. It was a blast. Thanks so much.
All right.
See you soon. Bye.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for listening, folks. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.